Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
And Yom HaTzmaut is a day of great simcha. Not a little bit of confusion also in Klal Yisrael. There's no question that 72 years day was a major turning point. A major turning point in the history of Klal Yisrael and the history of each one of us, and with immense ramifications and massive effect on the Jewish people. In fact, so massive that we're still trying to work it out. Still trying to figure out what exactly Yom HaTzmaut means for us. And maybe this year we have a special opportunity to figure it out a bit better, because we are sadly deprived of family and friends, we're deprived of the community, we are in isolation. And being in isolation is definitely a cause for some sadness. On the other hand, it's an opportunity for personal reflection, for thinking a bit more deeply about what these days mean, apart from the social celebration of the moment. And therefore, maybe what I'd like to try and do this morning is just add a little bit to our reflection on the meaning of Yom HaTzmaut, what it can mean to us, and how it has, in many ways, completely reframed Jewish history. And I think this is a challenge, particularly for people who are not just Zionists and lovers of Israel, but people who are B'nai Torah, who are looking at it from a Torah point of view. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, that everything is in the Torah. Everything has to be seen through the lens. The Mishnah continues. Through the lens of the Torah, we look at everything. And therefore, I'd like to try and do that this morning for a few moments. What really are the thoughts and the ideas that should be accompanying us on Yom HaTzmaut, given the wide spectrum of opinions and ideas and attitudes on this subject. Before I do so, I'd just like to mention, of course, that because of the difficulties in which we're living, the isolation of the pandemic, I speak on behalf of everybody here that we daven. First of all, we daven that HaKadosh Baruch Hu menam hageifa minachal osecha, should protect us and get rid of this terrible plague. Secondly, we dive into HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he's Matzmiach Yeshuos Borei Refuos, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should create a vaccine and a remedy against this plague. And thirdly, of course, a Refuah Shleima for all those people who are badly affected by this terrible virus. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should indeed soon release us. Really a case of, we say, Rofi Cholim and Matir Asurim. I think I never said Matir Asurim with more kavana than I have recently, that we are all Asurim. We are all isolated in many ways and imprisoned in our private space and unable to join with family and friends and community. But as I say, when it's a question of reflecting and thinking a bit deeper on a complex subject, being isolated and being alone has its benefits as well. I'm getting a few sounds here. I'm just going to mute everybody for the moment. Okay, muted everybody, I think. Right. You can unmute yourself if you want to say something relevant and pertinent, but I've muted everybody because there are some background noises in people's homes around you. So you might say, well, look, we've got a Jewish state, we are in Israel, let's celebrate, let's be happy, what's so complicated about it? So let me just start off by explaining one of the aspects which need a bit of deeper thought. Throughout Jewish history, we've always viewed the condition of Klal Yisrael in a conceptual framework, which is really a Galus and Geula. What is Galus and what is Geula? That we have learned a lot about, right? We know what is Galus. Sadly, you only have to open any history book of the last 2,000 years, and we know that Galus is being stateless, powerless, defenseless, being often in a state of poverty, at the mercy of other nations, subject to expulsions and blood libels and pogroms and crusades, and ultimately the Holocaust. That's Galus. Galus is the ultimate suffering of Klal Yisrael over the last two millennia. We don't need really to understand very deeply what Galus is. It's right there in front of us. It's an experience that we all have read about and have sympathized and empathized with. And we sit on the floor on Tisha B'Av and reflect on it. But what is Geula? So that is already something which needs a little bit more clarification, and which I'd like to speak about this morning a little bit. As I said, many people, so what do I mean by that? That it's either one or the other, it's good or evil, black or white. There are no middle stages. That Geula is something which we are in a state of absolute terrible suffering, and we get up and we say, we believe in a Mashiach who will come in a second, miraculously, and get rid of all our sufferings and difficulties. And that's what we call Geula. Because we have this concept, this simplistic and a binary concept of Geula, it's because of that that we have difficulty understanding the significance of Yom HaTzma'ut, and properly understanding what the nature of Israel and Yom HaTzma'ut means to us. So I'd like to do a few things. First of all, I'd like to bring you a few sources. I'm not handing out any texts or doing any texts today, but I'd like to bring you a few sources just to show you that in fact, the word Geula is a multi-layered concept. At the very end of it, there is, of course, the Geula Shlema, the idea of a Mashiach and a utopian world. But along the way, there are lots of stages of Geula. One of the most obvious sources for this is very recently we've had Leil Seder. And on Seder night in the Haggadah, we speak about Mishibud LeGeula. We're celebrating the process, the transition from Shibud to Geula. Shibud means to be in a state of slavery, oppressiveness, subservience. And Geula, Kadosh Baruch Hu took it out, Mishibud LeGeula, Avadim Hayinu L'Farim, Vayotzeinu Hashem, and that's Geula. And you might ask yourself, well, wait a minute, what do you mean that's Geula? That is, there's no Eretz Yisrael, there's no Beis HaMikdash, there's no Yerushalayim. And yet, on Leil Seder, we're talking about Geula. So this is already a very clear indication that the Torah uses, and Chazal and the Psukim, as I'll show in a minute, use the word Geula when we are simply being redeemed from suffering, redeemed from a negativity. Right? In that sense, certainly Yom HaTzma'ut and having Medinas Yisrael was understood from the very beginning as being a safe haven for the Jewish people. And from the very beginning, the secular Zionist world, the people who came to Zionism, like Herzl and others, without any Torah perspective, they simply saw Israel, the state of Israel, as an ir miklat, as a refuge, in order to, we shouldn't anymore be stateless and defenseless and completely vulnerable, and protect ourselves. And certainly the great achievements of Medinas Yisrael has been the creation of the safe haven and the ability to protect ourselves against our enemies with Tzal and other security services, and simply to have the format of the state of Israel changes the safety of every Jew on planet Earth, if you're, even if you're a Jewish person walking in the streets of Los Angeles or Johannesburg, you are safer because of the existence of Medinat Yisrael. Medinat Yisrael, and the, which is protective. And this even, this was clearly understood in the early literature of Zionism without any reference to Torah at all. It was actually a great Talmud Chacham called Yaakov Reines, who was the founder of the Mizrahi movement, who simply took this idea and translated it into a halachic concept and said that really we are religious Zionists, we are the Mizrahi movement, and our belief is in the value of Eretz Yisrael because of the Pikuach Nefesh. We need the Medinat Yisrael simply to save lives. And remember, this is before the Holocaust, many decades before the Holocaust. Nevertheless, the Mizrahi Party was founded on the basis that religious Zionists can understand the safe haven concept through the prism of the lens of halacha. It's Pikuach Nefesh, therefore it has to be worked for, it has to be promoted. We are saving lives of Jewish people by creating Medinat Yisrael. So all this is very beautiful. And in actual fact, I must tell you, the Mizrahi movement, of course, later morphed into the Mavdal, and that later on morphed into Habayit HaYehudi. I'm not going to go into all the politics of all this. But what's interesting is, something in the early 70s, after the 67 war, that the religious Zionist movement suddenly understood that to say that our religious Zionism is based on Pikuach Nefesh, a safe haven for Klal Yisrael, is really only Kita Aleph, is really only a basic understanding of the significance of Eretz Yisrael. There's really much more to it, and I'll come back to that in a moment. Secondly, I'd like to point out to you, in terms of the word Geula, if you have a chance, incidentally, anybody wants to say any Pirkei Tehillim today, the Pirkei Tehillim to say for Yom HaTzmaut is Tehillim Kuf Zayin. Tehillim 107 is the Tehillim which is most appropriate. Starts with the word Hodul Hashem Kito Kila Rav Chasto, right? And it goes on to say, and here's the second pasuk, Yomru Geulei Hashem Asher Go'olom Miyad Tzar. So here in pasuk 2 already, the Tehillim uses the word Geulim and Geula, that we have been redeemed, we should thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for redemption, and you read the continuation of the whole Perek, and there's no mention of Yerushalayim, no mention of Shiach, no mention of Tzion, no mention of the ultimate Geula. But I said, Go'olom Miyad Tzar simply means that we're redeemed from being in a position of persecution, being in a position of darkness and of constant threats and living under the cloud of constantly being at the mercy of other nations and of the brutality and the unspeakable cruelty of the pogroms, the crusades, the blood libels. It's difficult for us to imagine living in the world we live in. To what extent this was a life of fear and a life of sadness for all our ancestors for 2,000 years. There's the Tehillim, Yom Rugulim, the God Tsar, from that persecution. And if you read through, I highly recommend you to read through chapter Kuf Zayin. Everyone's got more time on their hands this Yom HaTzmaut than you usually do, because you're not going to any parties. And it ends up with the pasuk, the very last pasuk is, Mi chacham v'yishmo eileh v'yizboinenu chazdei Hashem. A chacham is somebody who thinks deeply, who's mitbonen, who reflects, who meditates on the chazdei Hashem. Somebody who realizes that he's been redeemed. Has he been redeemed to the geulah reina? Certainly not. He has not yet reached the Yemos HaMashiach and the messianic utopian vision. We haven't reached that at all by a long shot. Dangers and fear and suffering that came with that. Of course, it is true, Kal Vachomer, many times over. And for the Brana Yidden, for the people who are broken and the remnants, the Sha'iris Yisrael, after the Holocaust, have a haven to go to, where they were accepted, where they could live, where they could protect themselves and fight for themselves. This was nothing short of Chasdei Hashem of the highest degree. And that was a geula. So the first source of the word geula as a partial geula is the Leil Seder. The second source is Tehillim Kuf Zayin. And the third, last chapter of Megillah, which is talking about the Shema Esra that we say, is simply to be saved from the dangers and the sin with, and to be saved from that is already Ga'al Yisrael. The third point that I mentioned about from the Gemara in the last chapter of Megillah is the Gemara analyzes the sequence of paragraphs in the Shemoneh Esrei. And there is one paragraph which starts with the words Re'evo Anyenu V'Rivo Rivenu U'Ge'oleinu Meheir Elohan Shemeh Brochat Hashem Gal Yisrael is not talking about the Geula of Mashiach. It's not talking about a final redemption at all. That is later on in the Shemoneh Esrei. That's V'Yerushalayim Ircha, Tzemach David Avdecha. That's something else completely. So Rashi says this paragraph is talking about the geula, meaning a protection from the dangers in each generation, in each era. There are threats to the Jewish people. And we're davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Re'evo Anyenu V'Rivo Rivenu. If we have a threat from a plague or a threat from a terrorist, all that comes under the paragraph Re'evo Anyenu V'Rivo Rivenu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should fight our battles. Rivo Rivenu, of course, we're familiar with from the bracha after the Megillas Esther. Rivo Rivenu is a phrase used against enemies that are cropping up all over Jewish history. So why am I mentioning this? It's because of the word Geula. People get a bit nervous about the word Geula, as if one is saying, this is the Geula Acharina, as if this is the final redemption of Yemos HaMashiach. In actual fact, there's no question, if you look at the way Geula is used by Chazal and by the Pesukim in Tehillim, Geula is a process, and there are stages along the way. There are rungs on this ladder. And therefore, if we now want to try and define the nature of Klal Yisrael and the Jewish people after the establishment of Medinas Yisrael, and understand properly what it means to be living in the land of Israel in our generation, we need to be able to use the word geula, understanding that geula is calibrated. There are different levels of the geula, and this is maybe one of the stages is returning to Eretz Yisrael. So I'd like to now move on to the next point that I want to make, and that is the type of understanding which is largely in the writings of Rav Kook, but also in other people's writings about the 20th century return to the land of Israel. And that is not viewing our return to Israel simply as an ir miklot, as a safe haven, a refuge to protect us. That of course is important, everybody understands that's important, but it's in fact much, much more than that. And Rav Kook wants us to understand that we are actually living inside the prophetically predicted process of Geula. I'll just share with you for a minute a little small anecdote that happened to me several years ago. I was part of an organization that was funding certain developments in Israel. And one of the projects was in Mitzpeh Ramon in the Negev. And Mitzpeh Rabon is the middle of the desert, but they've developed it beautifully, and we were building a few buildings there. We, not me, but the organization I was part of, built a few buildings there and a few developing the town. And the surrounding area looks beautiful right in the middle of the desert. And yes, we were having a dinner there. The funders were not religious people. The builders were not religious people. The residents were not religious people. But we had a dinner, and the person who got up to speak praised the vision of the architect who had made such a beautiful office building there, the vision of the funders who understood that this had to be built, the vision of the mayor of Mitzpeh Ramon who understood that this was something to be encouraged. And then they asked me to say a few words. I hadn't actually prepared myself for it. But there are a few psukim which I've got sort of hardwired into my head, which are quite useful under these circumstances. And so I got up and I said, look, it's very nice that the mayor and the architect and the funders have got this vision, but it's important to say that we are all living inside the vision of Yeshaya HaNavi of 2,700 years ago, that he looked at the land of Israel and he said the day will come where the pasuk is, Ki nicham Hashem tzion, nicham kol chorvoseha, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will comfort Tzion, and all the chorvos, everything that is destroyed, will be rebuilt. By Yosem Midboro Ka'eden. This is Yeshaya chapter 51. By Yosem Midboro Ka'eden. And he will transform the Midbar into Gan Eden. By Arvoso Kagan Hashem. So we have a vision of Yeshaya HaNavi 5,700 years ago. And we are living inside that vision, because we have witnessed by Yosem Midboro Ka'eden that the Midbar is transformed into a Gan Eden. And this is something which was unheard of and considered impossible and considered a pipe dream for the 2,700 years since Yeshaya HaNavi said it. And today we're living inside that vision. And I think this is really the next point that I want to make. And that is to understand properly the significance of us living in Eretz Yisrael and our return to Eretz Yisrael, is to understand to what extent this is very much part of the vision of the Torah, the vision of Yirmiyah and Yeshayah and Yechezkel, and to what extent a lot of the Tanakh that we learn, or don't learn as the case may be, but I'd recommend you to learn it, the vision of the Tanakh relates directly to our current situation. And we should feel that and understand that. And I think the more I've personally come to understand it and appreciate it, the deeper my connection to Eretz Yisrael, to the land, to Medinas Yisrael, the deeper my connection is. That with all its faults, it's clearly not the Geula Acharona, it's not the end state, but it is a Geula along the way. So let me explain. There are certain undeniable facts about the way we are living today in the land of Israel. And the most striking one is the idea of kibbutz goliyos, the ingathering of the exiles, the Jewish people living at the four corners of the world. Many of them, including you and me, have made our way to the land of Israel. This is not something which has happened by chance, but first of all, the pasuk in Devarim and Parshas Nitzavim, Devarim chapter 30, famously says, "V'shov Hashem elokecha shivuscha v'shov v'kibetzcha mikol ha'amim." But HaKadosh Baruch Hu yafitz, he will scatter us, but he will gather us in from all those places. And indeed, kibbutz goliyos is the first stage of the geula. According to all different counts of what geula means, there's no question that the way in which Klal Yisrael are drawn like a magnet, drawing members of Klal Yisrael. I must tell you, I was sitting in London for years and I could feel the magnetic pull of Eretz Yisrael pulling me back here. And many of you, I'm sure, felt the same thing. That this is predicted by Moshe Rabbeinu in Parshas Nitzavim. In Yeshaya chapter 11, which some of us read this morning, Yeshaya says, "V'osaf nidche amo Yisrael unefutzos Yehuda yekabetz." That the scattered members of Yehuda and Israel will be gathered in, and this is all part of the pre-Mashiach process. This is all part, and this is undeniable. Or I would say, never in the history of the Jewish people in the last 2,000 years has there been a streaming of Jews coming into the land of Israel from north, south, east, and west. And Yechezkel chapter 36, I'll bring you back to your land and I'll gather you in from all the different countries And it says here, Yechezkel, actually chapter 36 is also something well worth reading, as I'll show you in a minute, because what's interesting in Yechezkel chapter 36 is that he speaks about the ingathering of the exiles. When he describes the ultimate Geula of Mashiach, he describes the Kibbutz Goliath as a stage prior to the spiritual growth of Klal Yisrael. In other words, it's only after Kibbutz Goliath, then the next pasuk after that it says, "Zarakti aleichem mayim tahorim v'taharetem," then you will go through a period of tahara, and then the next stage is "V'nosati lachem leiv chadosh v'ruach chadosha," that the spiritual growth of Klal Yisrael is the next stage. That indeed, Rabbi Isai, is the stage that we are looking forward to, and we are hoping for every day, right? That is something which is still on the program. But the fact that it's still on the program should not blind us to the fact that we are living through the Geula process. It's true the Geula hasn't come, but the Geula process is on its way. How far on its way? For that you need to be a Novi, and I'm afraid my qualifications don't extend quite that far. But the certainly we are a Baderech. And I think if anybody thinks deeply about Yom HaTzma'ut and what it means to be here, has to understand that there is a plan for a Geula, and we're not there, but we are definitely Baderech. We are no longer in the full Golus, but we are not yet in the full Geula. We can no longer think of Jewish history as a binary system. It's a graded system with many, many levels and layers to it. And all we can do is hope to be part of this tremendous process and in some way to contribute to it. There's one very interesting addition to this idea of us being in the process of Geula, which I'd like to share with you. And that is in Yechezkel chapter 36. In general, those of you interested in Tanakh, try and read Yechezkel chapter 36. It's just before the chapter about the dry bones, which is also very much relevant to Medinas Yisrael. In fact, a phrase which I'm sure you're all familiar with, the phrase of Odla Ovdo Tikva Senu, the author of the Hatikva, he pinched this phrase from Yechezkel, because the dry bones, so to speak, in the prophecy said to Yechezkel, "Ovdo Tikva Senu, we're finished, there's no hope for us." And the revival of the dry bones is the Odla Ovdo Tikva Senu, is the hope of Klal Yisrael after it appeared to be completely crushed by the Golus, coming back to life again. But in chapter 36, there is a pasuk of which Chazal in the Gemara thought of great interest. Because the pasuk reads as follows. Pasuk says, "V'hushavti es ha'orim," I will bring inhabitants back to live in the towns, "V'nivnu ha'charobos," which were previously destroyed, "V'ha'oret ha'nashamot te'oved," and the land that was completely desolate will once again be cultivated, "V'atem harei Yisrael anafchem titenu," once again you will grow new branches, your trees will grow new branches, "U'parichem tisau," and they will yield great amounts of fruit. So here you have in Yechezkel a very beautiful description, and there are several other similar ones, but this is the one chosen by Chazal, to say that on the return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel, something will happen in the land. The land is not insensitive to its inhabitants. And this is an amazing idea. It's almost a mystical idea. Normally we think a land is simply somebody here has just sent me a message. I'd be interested to know, he says, when you told them about the vision of Yeshaya, what they said to you, what the people around you, because I was surrounded by a whole hall full of chilonim at the time. To my great surprise, these were people who are highly educated and professionals and who'd grown up in secular Israel. They pretty much never heard of Yeshaya HaNavi and certainly never read him. And they were amazed to hear that Yeshaya HaNavi had a vision and that they were all actually living inside his vision. They were absolutely stunned by this, and they asked me why we were never taught this in high school. And that indeed is an exceptionally good question, but not for now. But I call upon him. It's an extraordinary thing. It's a very sad fact. There's so much beautiful material in the Tanakh, which actually never finds its way to people who don't get a decent Torah education. And particularly the writings of Yeshaya HaNavi and Yechezkel are absolutely relevant to the life in which we live today in a very powerful way. Here Yechezkel, coming back to my point, Yechezkel in chapter 36 is saying, what's going to happen? Stage one is Kibbutz Golias. Stage two is the land will blossom. The land will give forth fruit. And it's never done that before. In other words, and that's what the Mephoshim here say, and the Midrashim and the Chazal say, that what he means is that Eretz Yisrael is actually a land, if you like, with a bit of a personality. You might even say a bit of a grumpy personality. It's only willing to give forth fruit to the people it loves. People it doesn't love, they can work as much as they like, it ain't gonna work. Ain't gonna happen. You can work as hard as you want, and you can make it try and make it flower and flourish. Nothing's gonna happen because Eretz Yisrael has this built-in sense that it's only willing to give fruit, it's only willing to give produce to a nation, to Am Yisrael, and not to any other nation. Incidentally, I've been told by people who knew Gush Katif before the expulsion from Gush Katif that it was like Gan Eden there, and the amount of food, fruit and vegetables and bountiful produce that was being grown there was amazing. And actually, since we've left it, it's once again returned to being a completely barren, desolate, a piece of land. That's an interesting fact. Some of you listening might know firsthand this, but I was told by someone who saw it not so long ago. Anyhow, so Yechezkel makes this prediction. One of the things that are going to happen is Kibbutz Golias will trigger off something in the land itself that it will be, in inverted commas, willing or agreeable to produce its fruit. What is this about? So here we have a Gemara in Sanhedrin of Tzadik Ches Amud Aleph, where Rav Abba, one of the Amoraim, comes along into the Beis HaMedrash, and he was very excited. And he said, we talk about Yemos HaMashiach, and we talk about what are going to be the simanim, what are going to be the signs that we are in the process of the Gula. Says Rav Abba, Ein lecho keitz megule mizeh. This is a verbatim quote from Sanhedrin, Daf Tzadiches. I remember discussing this with my brother Shlomo a few years ago. Ein lecho keitz megule mizeh. There is nothing more clear, he says, that the keitz, that the geula is in gear, that it's in process. There's nothing more tangible than the land producing its fruit, the land being fruitful. That is a simon that we are on the process along the way of the geula. This abundance and productivity is amazing. And what's interesting is on that piece of Gemara, which was written 1500 years ago, Rav Abba, there's an interesting Marsha. So the Marsha, if you can imagine, is sitting in Krakow 400 years ago. And Krakow 400 years ago, there was a big Jewish community, a lot of Torah there, but it wasn't a great pleasure to live in Krakow 400 years ago, the persecution, the blood libels, the accusations, the poverty. It was Golus proper. And the Marshal says, this is the simon for the Geula, that the land will not give its produce to any other nation. Once the land is giving its produce, that's a simon that the ultimate geula is baderech. It's not a sign that it's happened, but that it's baderech, that it's on the way. And I find this very fascinating, that we have here two phenomena, both of them explicitly mentioned in the Tanakh and explained by Chazal, both the ingathering of Jews from all over the world and the abundance and fruitfulness and the productivity of the land of Israel from an agricultural point of view. These are two simonim that what we are living in, we're living here in Eretz Yisrael, and here I came back to the point I mentioned earlier, that living here in Eretz Yisrael is not only what Rav Reiners thought it was, and what Herzl thought it was, which was a safe haven in order to create security from our enemies, but it's something else completely, it's on top of that, it's something else completely. It is in fact the first stages we are in, we are baderech, in this, along the way of a geula process. How long will it take and how far we are, nobody can tell. But we're certainly entitled to use the word geula, that is something which we are living through. And I find that very exciting, and it should be something which frames our sense of living in Israel. And for those people who don't live in Israel, not everybody is practically able to make Aliyah, but everybody, as I've said to my Kehillah in London a few times, everybody has to have a dream of coming on Aliyah. Everybody has to have a plan and a dream to come on Aliyah when the opportunity presents itself, when it becomes possible. But if we are able, certainly, as I said to you in the beginning of this Shia, for me, it's the very first Yom Ha'atzma'ut that I am celebrating in Israel after our Aliyah, and it's the most amazing sensation. Sadly, I can't celebrate it communally. We're in isolation, but nevertheless, this is something which is strikes me very deeply, and understanding this process makes it a very much more meaningful. Just like to touch on something a little bit connected, which is a debate regarding our vision of Yemos HaMashiach. So if we're speaking about Geula, it's important to have an idea of the end state of what Yemos HaMashiach possibly could look like for us. But as the Rambam wrote in Hilchos Melachim, we don't have a precise detail by detail account of Yemos HaMashiach. We only know about it in its general broad brushstrokes, but there is one very fascinating debate, which is a debate already in the Gemara, but it's sharpened between the writings of the Rambam and the writing of Rashi. So Rashi and the Rambam had two very different views of what Yemos HaMashiach will look like. Right? Rashi writes in Maseches Sukkah Daf Mem Aleph, Rashi writes that ultimately we will be in Galus, and at a certain point, the Beis HaMikdash, HaShlishi, the third Beis HaMikdash, will descend Min HaShamayim, fully built, a miraculous intervention in world history. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring the Geula, Yeshua Hashem Keheref Ayin, and he connects it to a pasuk, one of the closing psukim of Oz Yoshia. And the pasuk says, "To be Emoi v'sito Emoi b'han achaloscha," that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that at the end of the Shiras Hayam, the pasuk says, "To be Emoi v'sito Emoi b'han achaloscha." Moshe Rabbeinu is already predicting HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take us and plant us on the mountain of your heritage. Mochay l'shivtecho po'alto Hashem, Mikdash Hashem konenu yodecho. That the Mikdash that will be built ultimately on the Har HaBayit will be konenu yodecho, will be shaped by your hands. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rashi understood that to mean that the base of Mikdash will appear fully built and ready to go. And that is the great moment of Yemos HaMashiach. And for Rashi and for the people who are, for those great Talmidei Chachamim and thinkers who followed that particular line of thinking, actually the bringing of Mashiach is, on our point of view, we are passive. We are just witnesses. In the language of Kriyas Yamsuf, his Yatzavu Ru'u es Yeshua Hashem, stand and look and witness and see what's happening. That's how Rashi understood it. And the truth is that some of the language used by Chazal, when they speak about Tzipisa the Yeshua, were you Metzape, were you full of hope for the Yeshua, or Kili Shuosko Kivinu Kol Hayom, that we are constantly living in hope. These are all really passive descriptions of living in hope, waiting for it, but actually doing nothing, right? This is one school of thought. This is a school of thought which in my mind is connected to that Rashi in Sukkah Mem Aleph. However, if you look in the Rambam at the very, very last chapter of the last thing that he wrote at the very end of his 14-volume Mishneh Torah, in Hilchos Melachim, chapter 12, I think it is, he says, Al yale al halev, you shouldn't think for a minute that Mashiach is going to be a miraculous time. That's a mistake. And of course, when the Rambam writes Al Yale Alei, you shouldn't think it, what he means is, I know lots of people who think it, and they're all wrong. That's really how to read the Rambam, that's what he means. Right? I don't think for a minute the Yemos HaMashiach is something which requires from us passivity, that it's going to be miraculous, nothing at all. It's going to require hard work. We're going to have to build a base of Mikdash. We're going to have to create leadership. But the Rambam writes, there are three things that are going to happen. Shalosh mitzvahs nitztavu Yisrael b'knisoson la'aretz. That's how he starts off Hilchos Melachim chapter 1. There are three mitzvahs that when you're nichnosim la'aretz, you come to Eretz Yisrael, there are three mitzvahs which Am Yisrael have to do. No yochid, no individual is obliged to do this. But once you're in Eretz Yisrael, you're not an individual anymore. You are part of Am Yisrael. And there are three mitzvahs. The first one is limnos lehem melech, appoint a king, appoint leadership, appoint a government. In our age, this is turning out to be a bit more complicated than we thought it would be. But ultimately, we've got to have leadership and a government, limnos lehem melech. The second thing is lichrozecha Amalek, to fight Amalek, to fight the enemies who are threatening Klal Yisrael. And the third one is livnos beis habechira, to build the beis hamikdash. This, says the Rambam, are chiyuvim, three of the tariyat mitzvahs, which no individual is obliged to do or can do. It's a mitzvah for Klal Yisrael. And therefore, he says, when you come into Eretz Yisrael, suddenly you're Klal Yisrael, and you need to build the beis hamikdash. He says, who's going to build the beis hamikdash? The answer is you and me. You and me have to build it. We're not even allowed to let non-Jews build it because it has to be built with Shema. Every stone has to be built with Shema. And it has to be built by Klal Yisrael. It's not going to come down fully built. For the Rambam, Yemos HaMashiach is hard work. I've often thought, incidentally, you know, many Gedoli Hasidus and Gedoli Yisrael write that they set aside special Big Day Shabbos to greet the Melech HaMashiach. They had a special cupboard, a special drawer with Big Day Shabbos, that when the Mashiach comes, that's the clothing they're going to wear. And I understand that sentiment. Of course, when Mashiach comes, it's a great Yom Tov, and it's Big Day Shabbos. But I also have a feeling that Mashiach's not going to, according to the Rambam, Mashiach's not so happy to see everybody dressed in Big Day Shabbos. He wants people dressed in Big Day Avodah. He wants people coming dressed in their building clothes, and in their military clothes, and in their clothes of action. You know, he doesn't want a whole nation celebrating Shabbos. For the Rambam, Harachman Yom Chileinu Yom Shekuloi Shabbos, that's not Yemos HaMashiach. That's Techiyas HaMesim, that's a different stage completely, far beyond Yemos HaMashiach. Yemos HaMashiach for the Rambam is a very this-worldly, practical, achievable goal. And the beautiful thing about the Rambam's vision is, what it means is that the world in which we're living today, and this is a message I think I'm going to have to leave you with coming up to the end of the Shia, the world, the imperfect world in which we live today, where the government and the Supreme Court and the educational system and all with all the difficulties that exist there, from a Torah point of view, from an Emunah point of view, from all that, nevertheless, we are baderech to the Geula, and the world we live in today already contains the potential, b'koyach, but not yet b'poyal, of the Geula Acharona. We don't need a miraculous intervention, says the Rambam, in order to have the Geula Shalema. There is a process. And when the Rambam wrote that, that process was far off in the future. As of 72 years ago, that process already is striking root. And we are already seeing Kibbutz Golias. We're seeing the productivity of the fruit of the trees. The Ein Lecha Keitz Megulim is there. There is no greater sign, says the Gemara in Sanhedrin Sanichas, of the anyone who travels around Israel and sees the most amazing, amazing orchards and vineyards and a productivity of fruit and vegetable, which hasn't been seen for 2,000 years, must take with him a Tanakh and read the Psukim in Yechezkel chapter 36 and understand that this is not a simple matter. This is the land talking to you and me, talking to us and saying, welcome home. And that is really the thought I'd like to leave you with here at Yom HaTzma'ut, Tov She'en Peh, 72 years into Medinas Yisrael. Be'ezras Hashem, for many years in the future, will celebrate the growth of this process of Geula. We are Baderech, we're definitely on the way. We're on the way in a way that our parents and grandparents could only have dreamt for. Hoyinu kacholmim. They were dreaming. We are no longer kacholmim. We are already holach yelech uvocha. We're already in the midst of making it happen. And Be'ezras Hashem, this geula, this partial geula that we have, that we are experiencing, should become a full geula b'mehir of Yomenu. And please God, lots of the difficulties that we see today in Eretz Yisrael will be teething problems for the Geula Shleima. I wish you all a Chag Atzma'ut Sameach, and please God, we will have many more. I'm going to unmute everybody.